I was just at Duane Reade because I needed to find relief for my allergies. You know the symptoms, a runny nose, sneezing, nasal congestion. Luckily, Duane Reade and Walgreens have a wide selection of Walgreens brand allergy products, so I can find effective relief I can trust. So no matter what allergy season brings, Duane Reade and Walgreens are around the corner with the right relief fast. Walgreens, trusted since 1901. Now with card, Walzier and Walitin 30-count tablets are $14.99 through January 20th. Use as directed.
Welcome to the Vaknin Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
We are already 10 events into the 2018 PGA Tour season. With 1 week in the books for the Web.com Tour, we're down to four teams remaining in the NFL and getting close to the Super Bowl. My Buckeyes are winning big in the Big Ten. I'm heading to Florida. Life is good, Carlos. On tonight's show, we're going to cover Golf Channel's cameraman walked off the job on Sunday. Patton Kizzire collected his second win of the year in a playoff. The Europeans won the Eurasia Cup, but the feisty Asian team gave them a scare. We've got a ton of golf to talk about tonight, Carlos, so let's get to it. Let's go.
Let's go. A lot to talk about. And we're going to be recapping all the weekend's action. As usual, we're going to get some quick previews of what's going to happen this upcoming week. Hopefully, we're going to have our VIG this week, but hey, we'll keep it for now. So just in case we cannot get him through, you know, we're not saying who it is, but we'll let you know if it goes through. We always have our VIG, our practice range today. You don't want to miss it. You don't want to miss it. We're going to talk about Brad Fritz all over, and it's going to be really, really good. And I'm sounding like Trump. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Anyway,
huge. It's going to be huge.
It's going to be huge. It's a huge program today. Hey, Fred. Let's
make
start
back
nine
report great again.
Yeah, we're making it great again and again and again. Hey, let's start with the weekend backspin and the recap of this weekend's action on the major tours. And we have the PGA Tour still in Hawaii this past week, and they're going to be landing this week in the States. But, hey, what happened at the Sony Open there in Hawaii?
Well, Carlos, there's so much to talk about. You may want to take a nap. You may just want to lean back a little bit in your chair there, close your eyes a little bit, because this is going to take me a minute, because there wasn't much golf. I mean, it was mostly all kinds of other stuff. The actual golf at the Sony Open took a back seat to the other news that was coming out of Hawaii last week. But, as I mentioned, Patton Kizzire did win for the second time this year. There were some very strange happenings in Hawaii, topped by a strike that forced the Golf Channel cameramen to walk off their jobs on Sunday. Blaine Barber's caddy fell and suffered a nasty head injury. Jordan Spieth made a quadruple bogey, but still made the cut. And then there was that fake missile warning. So it was quite confusing. Needless to say, Golf Channel was hard-pressed to provide adequate coverage of the Sony Open when the union that represents the camera operators called for a strike on Sunday at the Sony Open and the Diamond Resorts Invitational, the two events the Golf Channel was broadcasting on Sunday. Back at the corporate office in Orlando, the managers loaded up a couple of buses, hauled the studio workers across town to the Tranquillo Golf Club to run the cameras there, but it was a bit more difficult to get qualified camera operators in Hawaii. There's that little Pacific Ocean that's in between there. It creates a problem. Announcer Jerry Foltz even did a stint in a camera tower. Production work had to be done back in Orlando, and the announcing was done with pictures from an Orlando studio crew. Obviously, the coverage was limited to a few groups, but we'll take on to talk about that more in the Par 5 News a little later. Blaine Barber's caddy, Corey Gilmer, fell and hit his head in a restaurant and was in critical condition in the hospital on Friday night. Golf World reported Gilmer was in critical condition in a neurological intensive care unit due to the fall at a restaurant after the second round of play on Friday. Barber stayed with his friend through most of the night. I slept 3 hours. That was about the hardest day of golf I've ever played, he said after the round on Saturday. Swelling on the brain is causing the medical issues for Gilmer. The latest report is that he is stable but unaware. However, he does seem to be responding to treatment. The injury to the caddy affected Barber's play. Those last 2 days were really refreshing to play for me, for the golf not to mean that much because it's always way too important and way too grueling. So to go out there and really free, to go out there really free and not concerned with the result was a good change of mind. I think this kind of one of those key moments in my life that is just going to put things in perspective a bit. Barber posted 69 on Sunday to end up T67. And then there was this fake missile attack. At 8:07 on Sunday morning, an emergency warning alert was sent to citizens' phones. It said, ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill. Officials rapidly confirmed the alert was a mistake. They said the employee who pushed the wrong button feels awful about the panic-inducing incident. Well, even after all that stuff, there was still a golf tournament. So Kizire survived a six-hole playoff with James Hahn to secure the second victory of 2018, jumped back to the top of the FedEx Cup race. His goal this year was to win the $10 million FedEx Cup, and he's well on his way. There's a long way to go, but, you know, it's looking good. This looks very similar to what we saw from Justin Thomas last year when he won a couple tournaments in Hawaii and really kicked off his year. Kizire said, I love trying to get better and putting myself in uncomfortable spots. That's all I want to do is just be somewhere that I've never been because that gets me uncomfortable. That's when I know I'm doing something right. I'm just going to keep working hard. I want to get that third win. The first win was big, and this one is even bigger. Hahn did make a run on Sunday, moving up 13 spots with a brilliant 8-under par 62. He had four birdies and a bogey on the front nine, and then five birdies on the back to post a 30 to get to 17-under par and take the clubhouse lead. Kizire held a 54-hole lead. He had made nine pars on the front, but start off the back with a pair of twos. He made an eagle two at number 10 and added a birdie at the par 3 11th. But that would be his last birdies of the day, parred in from there, failing to make a birdie at the easy 18th to secure the win. Hahn could only wait. After matching pars in the first five playoff holes, Hahn blinked with a bogey at the par 3 17th, giving Kizire his second win of the season and setting up the huge year. Can you say Ryder Cup? Carlos, one of your candidates for Rookie of the Year, Ollie Schneiderhans, finished T7. Defending champ Justin Thomas finished T14 with Jerry Kelly, Daniel Berger, and Zach Johnson. Pretty good week for the old guys. It's a shorter course, ball hitters golf course, so you'd think that Kelly and Zach Johnson would do well there. After posting a quadruple bogey at number 8 on the first round on Thursday, Spieth kept fighting. He carded a 69. Followed by 68 on Saturday with a pair of 66s on the weekend to finish T18. One more important score to report, Adam Schenck finished at 8-under par for T39. What a great name for a golfer, Schenck. I would have to change my name. The Sony Open was the 10th event of 2018. The season is 25% complete, and we're still 2.5 months away from the Masters. Carlos?
You finished?
That's it.
Man, you didn't let me finish my dinner here. I was to get my dinner in. You said relax.
There was all that other stuff. There's very little golf. There's all that other stuff.
Very little golf. Oh, man. But Patton Kasir, who was, and you might remember, I picked him as the player of the year for Web.com Tour a couple of years ago. So he's now really living up to, I mean, he's not a young guy. He's not on the early 20s, but he is right now the early, very early leader in the FedEx Cup. But you know what he reminds me of, what he could become is a player like Jimmy Walker. I mean, he is a player that can run off in this early part of the year and run it off to have a great year. And who knows what can happen? He really is very consistent. And this is his second win of the season. He also won the OHL Classic. And he's now the leader by 452 points on the FedEx Cup standings. And, hey, you can't fault him for thinking. I'm going to quote him. He says, I'm just going to keep working hard. I want to get the third win. The first win was big, but this one is even bigger. Our ultimate goal is to be, he said it. It wasn't me. Number one at the end of the year. So, he's got the aspirations, and you got to respect them, and that's good because, I mean, that's a goal of him. It's better to aim high and miss than, you know, just aim low and make it. So good luck to him, and hopefully he will do very well there. James Hand, definitely he was left ejected after that playoff defeat. I mean, despite that superb final round of 62, he was struggling to find positives in the interview afterwards. And Russell Knox from Scotland was the best placed non-U.S. player. He started that round within four of the leader, Tom Hulich, and was still in the hunt with six to play, but dropped shots there at 15-16. Saw him fall back into a tie for 10th. And he is one that is really making a push for not being left out of the Ryder Cup. So we'll see how Russell Knox keeps doing here in this side of the States. Hey, let's talk now about the European Tour that had the Eurasia Cup playing. And let me remind you of this. Last week, we talked about this. The Europeans were going to play against the Asian team. But Thomas Bjorn, he warned his European team not to underestimate the strength of Asia ahead of this past week's Eurasia Cup in Malaysia. He believed that Arjun Atwal's side was possibly the strongest they have fielded since the inaugural staging of the event in 2014, which ended in a thrilling 10-10 draw. The Dane had six former Ryder Cup players in his team, along with the reigning Race to Dubai champion Tommy Fleetwood and rising stars Tyrrell Hatton and Paul Doon, while Paul Casey was returning to team competition for Europe for the first time since 2008, so 10 years ago. Darren Clark captained Europe to a comprehensive 13-point victory in the last Eurasia Cup 2 years ago, but Bjorn was expecting a much closer contest in Kuala Lumpur this week. And hey, you know, the European side had six of the world's top 20 competing, compared to an Asian squad with just one from the top 40 and half the team ranked outside the top 100. Still, the home side won Friday's four balls 3.5 to 2.5 and split the Saturday foursomes 3-3. So they held a 1-point lead going into the final day there at the Glen Marie Golf and Country Club. But yet, with an eye towards preparing for the Ryder Cup in September, Thomas Bjorn's side won 7 of their first 8 matches on the final day to ensure a successful defense of the Ryder Cup-style event, sparking celebrations from the 12-strong team and captain. Bjorn, who will be captaining Europe when they try to win the Ryder Cup back from the U.S. in Paris in September, he said, and I quote, "It was a great performance. I learned a lot about these players, and they have all got potential to be in Paris," end of quote. Thomas Peters scored the winning point as Team Europe dominated that final day of singles to come from behind and beat Asia 14-10 to retain the Eurasia Cup in Kuala Lumpur. Peters of Belgium won 4 of the first 6 holes against Benny Ann, but the South Korean bounced back to level the match on the 14th. Peters then went on to win the next 2 holes and eventually secured a victory on the 18th, and he said that it was always nice to get the winning point. Alex Noren started the day with a 4-2 victory over Nicholas Fong. He was followed with wins by Rafa Cabrera Bello and Tommy Fleetwood, who finished undefeated on the week. That's very good news for Bjorn, who really would like to use Tommy Fleetwood there on the Ryder Cup, before Paul Casey lost to Poom Sanskasin, but then Henrik Stenson, Bernd Wiesberger, Alexander Levy, and Tyrrell Hatton all won their matches. So, well, as far as the dress rehearsal go, Eurasia Cup proved to be a bit more challenging than the European captain Thomas Bjorn had hoped for, but in the end, their individual talent soared above the Asian team and they prevailed. It was good that it was competitive. I am sure that Bjorn is more pleased knowing that his players knew they were up against a rival that was playing inspiring at home with nothing to lose, so they had to go and work hard to win. Fred, that is the way to really get battle-tested, and in that sense, the Europeans got a win in the sense that they were able to get through it and earn the win.
Yeah, I did not get to see 1 minute of the Eurasia Cup. We were traveling a little bit over the weekend, and so I just was not able to watch it. But I saw where Peters scored the winning, and I got to tell you, here we are 9 months before the Ryder Cup, and we're already talking about it. But isn't it amazing that even like an Asian team who doesn't have a lot of ranked players, in the team events, they can compete. You know, it's amazing to me. Now, the depth of the European team, you know, showed when they went to singles because, man for man, they're just that much better. But, you know, that's why these team events are a lot of fun, and we're already looking forward to the Ryder Cup 9 months away. That's really something. Hey, there was some golf down in South Africa for the BMW South Africa Open. Chris Paisley had his new wife on the bag, signed a new deal with Callaway, and won in the first time out with the new sticks. Sounds like a winning formula, right? Paisley from England held the 54-hole lead, fired a bogey-free 66, had to weather a charge by South African native Brendan Grace, but he held on to win. Paisley comes from a family of golfers and attended the University of Tennessee before he bounced up and down between the Challenge and European tours since he graduated in 2011. At the age of 31, this may be just the sort of win that can give him the confidence to create a strong career. A score of note coming out of South Africa, Challenge Tour graduate Chase Koepka made a move up the leaderboard on Sunday to finish tied for 7th place. The strong showing also moves him up from 118th to 45th place in the race to Dubai. You know, if he has a couple more good tournaments and moves up in the OWGR, I mean, he could. The plan will come together for him, and he'll be in the majors and stuff. Not a lot of big names in South Africa last week with all of the golf at the end of last year, plus many top Europeans have waited to start the year at the big events coming up in the Middle East over the next couple of weeks. Retief Goosen was there. He posted a T20. Ernie Els was T31. And Jamie Donaldson was T34. Carlos, that's all I have on the South Africa Open.
And there was one more tournament that finished just a little while ago, and that was on the Web.com Tour. It was the Great Exuma Classic that was played in Bahamas for the Web.com Tour. And the winner there, it was Sungjae Im, who became the 16th player in Web.com Tour history to win in his first start as the tour kicked off its 29th season there at the Bahamas at the Sandals Bay, Emerald Bay. Im, who's just 19, carded a final round bogey-free 7-under par 65 to end the week 13-under par. With a 72-hole total of 275, the South Korean native won by 4 strokes over, who... mark it down. He's going to win it again. The Web.com Tour, Carlos Ortiz, he did it once. He won 3 times, and he almost won this one. But Im just went crazy there with 7-under par. And Ortiz, who birdied the 72nd hole to break out of a 5-way tie there for second place. So Im was very happy. He collected the first prize worth $108,000. He was there playing in the final group on the final round, so he quickly made his presence felt. Others finishing close was, as I mentioned, Carlos Ortiz was in second place solo. And Rafael Campos, my countryman from Puerto Rico, he ended in a tie for third along with three more players at four under. So great showing by him. After that, Max Homa, Steve Marino, where Matt Ryan, Will Wilcox. So a great tournament to start the season there on the web.com tour, Fred. So any other words you have before we move on to the four call?
Yeah, I just got a couple things here from the Diamond Resorts Invitational. It was the other event that Golf Channel was supposed to be televising last weekend. It was a pro celebrity event in Orlando. Featured some Champions Tour players and a few LPGA players, along with their celebrity partners. As I mentioned, it was held at Tranquillo Golf Club in Orlando. A lot of former Major League Baseball players, as well as entertainers and other retired athletes, sprinkled in. They played the modified Stableton scoring format. Scott Parel won the professional portion of the event, pocketed $125,000. Scott Dunlap, John Daly, always up for a good party, Wes Short Jr., and Lee Jansen rounded out the top five. LPGA star Brooke Henderson came in seventh overall. She gave the old guys a pretty good run. Stableton points format, that's perfect for her with her risk reward type player like she is, going for pins all the time. The Stableton tents, is a temptation to go for the birdies and eagles on every hole. Other LPGA players, Brittany Lincecum was T25, Brittany Lang T28, and Jarena Pillar was T30. Nick Faldo was in the field. He finished T22. Former tennis pro Marty Fish won $100,000 in the celebrity portion of the event. Jeremy Renick, Mark Mulder, Jack Wagner, and Tony Glaus closed out the top five for the celebs. The big story out of the Diamond Resorts Invitational was, once again, Golf Channel's camera operator strike that caused a disruption of the television coverage, although because the studios were right there, they were able to get some people over and didn't have near the problem they had in Hawaii, Carlos. And that closes out the backspin portion presented by Boyne Resorts. Carlos, you know I love to visit and play golf in northern Michigan every summer, and one of my favorites up there is Boyne Resorts. Boyne has grown from a single ski hill in 1947 to encompass three of the best stay-and-play golf locations in Michigan: Boyne Mountain, Boyne Highlands, and Bay Harbor Golf Club, with the gorgeous Inn at Bay Harbor, all located within close proximity to Petoskey. The Boyne Corporation has grown to include even more top-notch resorts in various parts of the country: Big Sky in Montana, Brighton Ski Resort in Utah, the Summit in Washington, New Hampshire's Loon Mountain, Sugarloaf, and Sunday River in Maine, Cypress Mountain in British Columbia, and Gatlinburg Skylift in the Great Smoky Mountains. In Michigan alone, Boyne's three resorts encompass 10 championship golf courses that will please any golfer's appetite, plus the views of Little Traverse Bay and Lake Michigan from the Lynx course of Bay Harbor are truly awe-inspiring. If you haven't visited the Boyne Resorts in northern Michigan, do yourself a favor and book your next summer vacation now. You can check out their special Great Escape package at boyne.com/golf. boyne.com/golf. Carlos, back to you.
And with that, we wrap up our weekend backspin. Now it's time for our four call or quick previews of what's going to be happening this weekend. And Fred, the PGA Tour is making landfall now on this side of the states, in the contiguous states, and it's going to be the PGA Tour Career Builder Challenge, the first tournament stateside that is going to be taking place. So tell us all about that tournament this weekend.
Yeah, they're showing up in the desert, Southern California desert in the Palm Springs area. They play over three courses with a host of celebrities and amateurs paired with the professionals. It's one of the biggest pro-ams you're ever going to find. Hudson Swafford is the defending champion. The field will be vying for a piece of $5.9 million total purse, with $1.06 going to the winner, as well as the 500 FedEx Cup points. If you want to place a wager, John Rahm is the Vegas favorite at 9-1, followed closely by Brian Harman at 14-1. Who'd ever thought that Brian Harman would be one of the top two odds guys for winning a PGA Tour event prior to starting? But he's been playing really well. A few other names of interest in the field this week: Patrick Reed, Webb Simpson, Kevin Kisner, Phil Mickelson. Hey, we're going to have a Phil sighting this week. Patton Gazier, than Zach Johnson. So you're going to have to check Golf Channel for the exact times and coverage or stream it on PGA Tour Live. I tried to find some information, and it's just not out there. So they were having more meetings today with the union. Hopefully they're going to come out with with some agreements there so they can get stuff to come off without a hitch. But now that they're back on the mainland, they can probably get some people in there. From what I'm hearing, I'll save the rest. We're going to talk more about the strike. But just check your listings. Check Golf Channel. They're supposed to be broadcasting it this weekend.
Unofficially, it's 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern time there on Golf Channel, Thursday through Sunday. But like you said, that could change. But that's what it's supposed to be, Thursday through Sunday, 3 to 7 p.m. on Golf Channel. And like he said, John Daly received a sponsor's exemption. He's going to join there, Mark Brooks and Lee Jansen as the PGA Tour champions, members in the field. Bubba Watson will also be making his first start of the year. He has slipped to number 93 in the world rankings. This is nearly 2 years removed from his last victory. So watch out for Bubba Watson and see what he can come up. But he really is going down, down, down. Hey, let's talk about the European Tour, the first big tournament that is going to be played on that side of the pond. The site will be the Abu Dhabi Golf Club in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. That course has a yardage of 7,583 yards. It plays at a par 72. The purse will be $3 million, and the defending champion is Tommy Fleetwood. Last tournament out, like you mentioned, Chris Paisley, he won the BMW South African Open. The very, very early Race to Dubai leader is Australian Wade Ormsby. Some notes to be wearing, not worry, but to take care of here on this tournament is Rory McIlroy will be making his season debut after coping with a rib injury for most of last year. He hasn't played since the British Masters and has slipped to number 11 in the world rankings. Abu Dhabi and the Scottish Open had the strongest fields of all regular European Tour events last year, and this one is not too far. Dustin Johnson is going to be playing for the second time. He was just a runner-up a year ago. The field has three of the top 10 with Dustin Johnson, Justin Rose, and Henrik Stenson. Other notables also playing are Matt Kuchar and Paul Casey. Bryson DeChambeau, he has received a sponsor's exemption. Chris DeMarco won the inaugural Abu Dhabi Championship 2006. Ricky Fowler in 2016 is the only other American winner of the tournament. Paul Casey and Martin Kaymer are two-time winners of these events, so look out for them. Television, well, if it stands, it will be Thursday through Friday from 2 to 8 a.m., 2 a.m. to 8 a.m. in Golf Channel, and Saturday and Sunday would be 3:30 a.m. to 8 a.m. also on Golf Channel. Check your listings as the tournament approaches. The next week, Fred, will be the Omega Dubai Desert Classic, so things are heating up on the European Tour, and not only in the temperature that is going to be played there on the desert.
Yeah, the European Tour gets going in earnest now, so Abu Dhabi and then Dubai, that kind of kicks things off. They usually have pretty good fields. Most of the European guys want to get in there. Their licks, so they start there in those 2 weeks to get some of the required tournaments in. So, the Web.com Tour will stay in the Bahamas for the great Abaco Classic at the Abaco Club, with the first round to be held on Sunday. So they just finished up today. So the next tournament's going to start on Sunday with the final round scheduled for Wednesday. That's kind of in an effort. You're going to talk a minute about the Champions Tour. They're actually going to be playing Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So that gives, if Golf Channel can get everything covered, that gives them live golf coverage every day from Thursday clear around to next Wednesday, Carlos.
And like you mentioned, on the Champions Tour, it's going to be the Mitsubishi Electric Championship at Ualalai. The site is Kapu'uleu Kona in Hawaii. The courses, the Hula Lalai golf course, is a 7,170-yard par 72. It's going to have a purse of $1.8 million with a winner's share of $300,000. The defending champion, who? Wait, Bernard Langer. Don't know who that is. I think he, well, so apparently he wins. He wins sometimes here on the Champions Tour. Last tournament out, Kevin Sutherland won the Schwab Cup Championship. This is a 44-man field. It's for winners from the last two seasons. Senior major champion since 2013. 8 special invitations based on PGA Tour victories and majors. And Hall of Fame members who played at least 8 times on the PGA Tour champions last year. Langer is a 3-time winner of this event. Langer's 7 victories last year gave him 36 on the PGA champions, 9 short of the record held by Hale Irwin. Jerry Kelly and Vijay Singh are in the field. Both played last week in the Sony Open. Kelly tied for 14th while Singh missed the cut. Fred Couples and Tom Watson are in the field. Also is playing Peter Jacobson. The next tournament will be in February 9 to 11, so they're going to take a little break, and they're going to be in the Boca Raton Championship February 9 through the 11th, Fred. Any final words before we move on to our next segment?
Yeah, just the fact that there's one more little tournament on the Asian Tour, the SMBC Singapore Open. You got Sergio in the field over there along with Pat Perez, Louis Oosthuizen, and Yuta Ikeda. You know, Ikeda was 35 on the OWGR. I didn't know he was ranked that high. They're playing at the Serapong course at the Sentosa Golf Club. They're playing for $1 million purse. And the LPGA Tour still is not starting yet. They don't start until next week with the Pure Silk in the Bahamas, Carlos.
And with that, we wrap up our weekend, our four call, which is the weekend quick previews. And now let's move on to the Par 5 news, where, Fred, you're going to kick it off, and now you can talk. I know you've been wanting to talk about this. You mentioned it already like 5 times. The Kinnerman strike that happened this past week, how is that going?
That caught me completely by surprise, Carlos. I'm trying to get it on, the TV or get it on my tablet or my phone. I wanted to watch a little bit, to see what was going to happen with that thing. And I can't find it. And, then I read the news and, oh, there's a strike and it's affected the whole tournament. And, oh, my goodness. So I just gave it up then. But so anyhow, union members of the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, which includes camera personnel as well as video and audio production technicians, walked off the job and picketed at the Sony Open and the Diamond Resorts Invitational last weekend, leading to limited coverage of the two events. The workers are dissatisfied with efforts between the union and management of the Golf Channel to reach a new contract and, of course, the stalled negotiations. Golf Channel said it has been negotiating an agreement for 9 months with the union, but those efforts have not yielded a resolution. We look forward to reaching a mutually agreeable contract, and some technicians have chosen to walk off the job. So, Golf Channel does have contingency plans in place for just these kind of situations. Audio coverage was produced in the Orlando studio, and announcers, just like Jerry Foltz, were manning cameras in Hawaii because there was nobody else to do it. 36 union members picketed outside the main road into Wailea Country Club in support of the Golf Channel's technical crew. John Colini, an international representative for the union, said its members wanted Golf Channel to meet industry standards, whatever those are. It should be mentioned that the union barely survived a vote to continue with this negotiation, and it was only after a last-minute emergency meeting they got enough votes to have the strike. And it should be mentioned that not all of the union members walked off the job. As a matter of fact, Some are quitting the strike and have come back to work. So I think they're going to get this thing taken care of quite quickly, or at least have enough people on site to get the events covered. But the strike also affected international coverage. As Sky Sports had contracted their video feed through Golf Channel, and with camera operators and video production people walking the picket line, they too were forced to provide limited coverage. So Golf Channel is scheduled to produce two tournaments this week, the Career Beetle Challenge and the Great Abaco Classic in the Bahamas on the web.com tour, and then, of course, the Mitsubishi Electric Championship in Hawaii. So we'll kind of see what's going to happen. So stay tuned for more excitement from the control booth and see if the Golf Channel can reach a deal with the with these people to get them back behind the camera and back in the truck where they belong.
Man, I really don't, because I know that they might have some valid claims and valid points, but I think they did it all wrong. I mean, they are getting... When you do this kind of things, you try to get the public to back you up. Right now, with what they did, people are very upset at them. It's like you have to try to get them on your side so you can have more leverage. You make a threat, we're going to do this, but never had I heard about anything that was going on with them. You know, they should have manage this better, and I just think they, that's why some of them, it was so hard to get that vote to pass. Otherwise, they would have been more united, they would get more out of this strike that they're having right now. You know, it's so, I don't know who their leader is, but this is just not the way to take to get a strike going. I mean, you need to get more leverage. And really, just by doing this, you're just hurting yourself. Really, at the end of the day, I don't think that they're getting... Yes, go ahead.
Where's Ronald Reagan when you need him? He'll just fire them all and then go hire new ones.
don't even say Donald Trump. I think he would...
I'll tweet Donald a note. Send him a tweet.
Donald, like, are jump they in. Thinking? Fire! You're fired.
You're fired.
Fire all. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Rory McIlroy. The rib injury that marred his 2017 golf season is fine, but he
is he still playing? I thought he retired or something. I haven't seen him around. He's still playing.
He's still playing. You know, he revealed even on Friday that he learned of another health issue, a heart irregularity. You know, he's just 28, but he disclosed a problem during an interview with the London Telegraph in Dubai, where he has been preparing for his return to competition after nearly a four-month break. He told the newspaper, "The rib is fine, no problems whatsoever. I had an MRI scan of my thoracic spine, and all was okay. But I've got a bit of an irregularity with my heart that I've kept on top of. I have a flat T wave, and I'll have to get an echocardiogram on my heart every 6 months, an MRI scan every year. I suffered a really bad viral infection in China 18 months ago, and they told me that's the reason that I have this thickening of my left ventricle, and there's a bit of scar tissue. For now, I just need to stay on top of it and have to stay fit. Hey, I was planning on doing that anyway." End of quote. He took it to social media later on Friday and said that the heart issue was really not a big deal, big of a deal, and nothing to worry about apart from getting an annual checkup like you should do anyway. And he wrote an Instagram post, and I quote, "I feel there's been a big reaction to it in the media, which there really shouldn't be. I'm fit and healthy and can't wait to get my 2018 season started in Abu Dhabi this week." End of quote. You know, he's coming off a tough year in which he dropped from number 2 in the world to number 11. He failed to win, but he has to understand. I mean, he might be as fit as he can, but when you have a heart irregularity, it doesn't matter how fit you are, it can drop you at any time. That was after the winning the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup in 2016 and starting the year with a playoff loss in South Africa. But that's where the injury woes began for him, a fractured rib that was diagnosed the day after the tournament. He skipped four scheduled starts and didn't return until March. Then, after taking a break to get married in April, he said that he overdid it in his preparations for the Players' Championship, the injury flaring again. Of course he had to overdo it. I mean, physically, he must have been... Okay, let's move on. he said about the U.S. Open, where he missed the cut, "I shouldn't have played in the U.S. Open. I got injured at the Players and should have said, yeah, I'll miss a major because I was only there to get by, and you can't win a major by getting by. The season just went on. Had a bit of a chance at the Open, but I really needed those 3.5 months of just me and team and family, mentally more than physically, probably. You know, after failing to make it to the Tour Championship, Rory played twice more in Europe before shutting it down in early October to regroup. He's a four-time major champion that is scheduled to make his season debut at this week's Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship, followed by the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. He has a heavy schedule leading up to the Masters that is going to include the AT&T Pebble Pro BHM, Genesis Open, the Honda Classic, the Valspar Championship, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and the Dell Technologies Match Play. So I think his heart is ready and his ribs are ready. He's ready to roll. And this news from Rory really comes on the heels of the return of Luke Donald this past weekend. His first start since he was forced to withdraw from the PGA Tour's RSM Classic in November because unbearable chest pain. Suspecting a possible heart attack, you might remember that the 40-year-old was rushed to a Southeast Georgia Health System facility in Brunswick, Georgia, where he was tested for over 7 hours for any signs of heart trouble. Fortunately, those tests came back positive, and Donald has not experienced any stress since the new year, confirming that things are now good with his heart. He explained in a press conference on Wednesday of this past weekend's Sunny Open that the doctors think it was like a stomach flu that his kids had gotten into his GI tract and presented itself as a heart issue. And that's actually... his heart was declared young for his age. So that's good news for him, and it's good news, obviously, if Rory is announcing that heavy schedule leading up to the Masters. So we're going to have this former two number one in the world playing, and I can't wait to see what Rory can bring to the table against Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, and Dustin Johnson. I know that Jason Day is going to have a lot to say. If Rory's there, up there, he can bang it with the best. And even if Tiger Woods is there, what a season is in store, Fred, for the PGA Tour.
We're going to have to get you a medical degree. You're doing all this health stuff here, talking about all these aortas and heart issues and conditions and all that stuff. That's the medical report for for January the 16th. Carlos, the next story, I love doing this kind of stuff. This is from the You Can Go Back Again file. A 61-year-old grandpa will compete for the Bellevue University men's golf team. You heard it, 61 years old. Don Byers. What's that?
The Champions Tour he's going to play?
No, this is college golf. He's an amateur. He's got a little eligibility left. He's going to use her up. So Don Byers played baseball in college nearly 50 years ago. This year, however, he'll be teeing it up with the college kids for the Bellevue University golf team. Byers said, "People said there's no way I can do it. When you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to try like hell to do it." During a simple round of golf last fall, as their foursome made the turn at Champions Run, a former Web.com Tour venue in Omaha, Nebraska, Byers was a few strokes under par thanks to an early eagle and usual steady play. He was playing with the golf coach, Rob Brown, from nearby Bellevue University. And the coach said, "Man, I wish you had some eligibility left." The two men laughed at the one-liner, hardly taking it at face value, but it got the wheels turning in Byers' head. A few holes later, he told Brown, "You know, I do still have some eligibility." The two men talked off and on for the next couple weeks, and as Brown began to actively recruit Byers, and voila, he became a college student again. Byers, like I said, tried to play baseball at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln back in the day, but he blew out his arm, never used up his collegiate eligibility. He started a successful insurance business, worked on his game, and over the years it has developed into a scratch handicap. Bellevue's golf team competes in the NAIA and was only formed 7 years ago, but under Brown's guidance has already jumped to number one in the nation. So Byers will find out quickly if his game travels well. The team's first road trip will be to Las Vegas in March. He's not worried about breaking curfew. At my age, I'm in bed by 8 or 9 anyway. Plus, my wife is coming on the trip. I'm hoping for conjugal visits. Carlos, golf is a game for any age, and it's great that this 61-year-old guy can have a blast playing with the kids in college.
Hey, Fred, you can do the same thing. You still have some eligibility you can use.
Yeah, I don't think so, Carlos. I don't think so.
No?
I don't think it's going to work.
It would be nice to be back in college. It would be nice to be back in college.
I would like to be going back to college part, but the problem is, as I recall, nothing really ever happened before about 11 or 12 o'clock at night, and by that time, I'm sound asleep. So I would miss it anyhow, so I might as well just stay home.
Okay, no problem. Hey, you know who's never at a loss of words? Colin Monty Montgomery. Yeah, Kieran's friend, his buddy. He teed off with LeJuan Mayer in an interview that touched on many interesting topics, and he was mulling over the number of injuries in modern golf and tennis and talk about Tiger racing the bar in terms of hard hitting. And he would seem to have the same effect when it comes to injuries because those who have tried to play like him have suffered as he has with fitness issues. The first three players that came to Monty's mind were Rory McIlroy with his persistent back problems, Jason Day with a veritable litany of troubles, and Paula Creamer with her recurring wrist complaints. He mentioned about the tennis side of it with Novak Djokovic and his elbow problems, Rafa Nadal with his back and knee issues, and Andy Murray, who just had a hip operation. He said that they're no different from the golfers in going for what he called hell for leather to stay on top of their game. To prove his point, he mentioned that he was watching the 1980 Wimbledon final between John McEnroe and Bjorn Borg and said it was like tennis in slow motion. He said that nowadays players are trying to hit the ball at 110% all the time and said that watching them hit it so hard hurt him. He wonders if the present generation has decided to throw everything at it for 10 years before calling a halt. With so much money around now, they can afford to do so, I mean. But they will be battling backs and hips throughout their retirement. That's what he said. You know, he would have something to say also about the latest bash and wedge golf is affecting courses. He talked about St. Andrews, widely expected to host the 2021 Open, and how players like John Rahm and Brooks Koepka are overpowering and not getting any shorter over the next 3.5 years, and how they will be able to blast the venerable course. He cited Augusta National as another famous venue which is struggling to keep the powerhouses in check. He followed by mentioning how the golf authorities have been talking about bringing things back a bit and said that while spectators enjoy watching the long ball and 300-yard tee shots, they also enjoy thoroughly when players of all shapes and sizes know how to work their way around the court. To make his point, he picked out 5'4" Ian Woosnam. Hey, good call on that one, Monty. That mention of the 1991 Masters Champions had Monty naming Tyrrell Hatton, who's 5'9" tall, as a player who's making good fist of keeping up with his mostly towering rivals. He said that he's not sure of what is it that he's got, but he can see it in his eyes and that he will be tough to beat in a Ryder Cup contest. Finally, he was asked if he had any ideas of how the Europeans under Thomas Bjorn should adjust their modus operandi now that the Americans seem to have picked up on the art of team camaraderie. And he went to recall when a journalist in the 2005 Open told him how he, playing the next day against Tiger, who will be able to beat, how he was going to be able to beat him, since Tiger was going to hit tee shots farther, irons more accurately, and putt better. That generally definitely must have been a brave one or an ignorant one. He answered the journalist that he agreed with everything he said, but that he would intend to score better than Tiger. And if only on Saturday that happened when he scored 70 to Tiger 71. And he closed by saying that Thomas Bjorn would be saying to his team things like that. And then went on to say that he thinks Bjorn has the cast to pull it off. Fred, Monty is always full of things to say about anything. It's not far-fetched. It's entertaining, and whether we agree with it or not, he always makes sense of what he's saying.
Well, Monty is quite well-spoken, without question. I've had the chance to talk to him a couple times, and he is very enjoyable to talk to. But one thing for sure, Carlos, he will never be accused of overtraining. Hashtag Mrs. Doubtfire. All right, so let's get to the last story on tonight's Par 5 News. Morning Reed says that the new tax bill hurts golf. Golf course operator and former PGA of America president Ted Bishop wrote in the Morning Reed that the Tax Cut and Jobs Act elimination of the 50% tax deduction for business expenses is yet another chink in the golf industry's armor. Bishop said the golf industry changed for the worse when that deduction went from 100% to 50% and sees the problems continuing with the move to 0%. He says this to President Donald Trump, who signed the bill into law. Regardless of the golfer's political party affiliation, the fact that a president who owns and operates golf clubs signed the legislation into law was no Christmas gift for the struggling industry and is rich only in irony. Sorry, guys. When the business write-offs for golf were cut to 50% in the 90s, that was the start of the decline of the golf business. The new tax bill will really hurt golf. These guys in Washington will do anything in their power to increase their revenue while not really considering the impact it may have on small businesses or golf courses, for the most part, which are small businesses. Carlos, I'm not really sure this will have a huge effect on rounds of golf play in the U.S., but it will not help increase business. Some rounds that might have been played by a sales department seeking new client relationships or an outing for employees that could have been written out will now go unplayed. This simply boils down to the federal Congress trying to increase revenues while not needing to pass a tax levy, which they know would make it more difficult to get reelected in the fall. My question is, though, how did Trump, who is a huge supporter of golf and a large course owner, let this happen? Must have been those pesky Democrats again. Man, those guys are bothersome. So, Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 News for tonight, presented by French Lick. Nestled among Amish farms in the rolling hills of southern Indiana sits one of the best resorts in the country, historic French Lick. The town and the resort first became known for their mineral springs when Dr. William Bowles opened the original French Lick Springs Hotel in 1845. The healing power of the waters drew people from all over for its soothing effects. The French Lick Hotel and Casino still occupy the same spot. The West Baden Springs Hotel, with its remarkable 200-foot domed atrium, was originally built in 1855, but fires and neglect left it uninhabitable until a group of investors from Indianapolis completely renovated it and turned it into one of the most amazing and hospitable hotels in the country. It is an awe-inspiring marvel even today. In addition to the games of chance at French Lick Casino, the resort offers the best cuisine available in any of the several restaurants on the property. Guests receive tender loving care at the spa, plus the French Lick Resort has two fabulous golf courses. The Donald Ross course first opened in 1917, and Walter Hagen won the 1924 PGA Championship over that same track. If you're a fan of golf history, the Ross course at French Lick is a joy to play. The Pete Dye course sits atop the second highest peak in Indiana and provides views for up to 40 miles. It has hosted numerous big events. The PGA of America held the 2010 PGA National Professional Championship on the course, plus it hosted the 2015 Senior PGA Championship, and the Women's Legends Tour recently held the first ever Senior Women's LPGA Championship on the Pete Dye course. The French Lick Resort needs to be added to your bucket list of golf destinations. I guarantee it will become one of your favorites. To book your stay at the French Lick Resort, visit FrenchLick.com, Carlos.
And with that, we'll wrap up our Par 5 news. Now is on for the practice range. This week, we're going to talk about Brad Fritz and his ban after testing positive for a prohibited substance. But the thing is that he turned himself in. You know, he offered Facebook apologies and talks. So, Fred, what's your take on all this that has happened to Brad?
Well, the question is, you know, is the PGA Tour right in issuing a 3-month suspension to Brad Fish for inadvertently using a banned substance? You know, plus he turned himself in. You know, this is the ultimate Bobby Jones character move. No one would have known if Fish hadn't told on himself. I mean, I'm sure it's not even enough that it was shown up in a blood test or whatever. But it is one of golf's core principles. Many instances over the years of players calling penalties on themselves when no one else would have known a rule was broken. You know, it just happens. That's what golfers do. Of course, the most famous of those was the penalty Bobby Jones called himself for causing his ball to move in a rough when playing with Walter Hagen in a U.S. Open, which eventually cost him another major title. When Jones was praised by the media for calling the penalty on himself, he said at the time, "You might as well praise a man for not robbing a bank." So to him, a devout golfer who revered the rules of the game above all else would not have been able to live with himself had he not called the rule infraction. So, Frisch called the ultimate penalty on himself last week when he discovered that he had used a banned substance in what was a diet supplement he was taking after missing out on earning a spot in the Web.com Tour for 2018. So, he's not eligible to play on any tour anyhow, on the Web.com or the PGA Tour. You know, he's going to have to go find some place to play or earn some eligibility someplace. So now he's got to take 3 months off. I guess he can work on his game and try to get ready. But, you know, I kind of compare this to Scott Stallings' suspension a couple years ago when he was suspended for unknowingly taking a fertility drug that was banned to help him and his wife conceive. It didn't really help his play or gain an unfair advantage on the other golfers in any way, but it was a banned substance in the rules, and the rule had to be enforced. In Frisch's case, I don't think this will hurt him too much. The public understands his predicament, and he has been very forthcoming with the facts. It does seem to me, however, that some semblance of common sense should be possible in these types of situations. These are young guys trying to make a living and make it to the next level. Yes, I'm sure some are taking banned substances to improve their play, but the majority of the suspensions that we've seen thus far from the mandatory testing or just from turning yourself in was initiated seem to be honest mistakes and not intended to enhance performance in any way. So, you know, a couple things come up here. Is the mandatory testing really working? I don't know. You know, half of the stuff that they've come up with so far is kind of stupid. You know, in a cough syrup or a fertility drug or now a diet pill. You know, how are you supposed to know all this stuff? You got to be a pharmacist to read all the labels to understand what you're doing. So, I don't know, Carlos. The rule's a rule. Frisch did a great job turning himself in, saying, hey, I did this. That's wonderful. Is 3-month suspension warranted? Yeah, I don't really think so. I think they could have done something a little bit less or gave him a pass on the first one. I don't know. So, I'm curious to hear what you say, Carlos.
I have to agree because what was he doing? He was just trying to – he was at the – what he says, he was weighing 242 pounds, so he describes as the heaviest that he has ever been. So he got in touch with his friend Alex, who's a chiropractor who offers a successful weight loss program. His advert promised you could lose a pound of fat per day, and Brad was finally sold when he saw his wife lose 25 pounds on the same plan. So, as a professional golfer, currently ranked 831 in the world, but having achieved a career high of 234, he would have the best part of 2 months off now during golf's off season. I mean, over the course of his pro career, he has earned over $800,000. So, what would this that weight loss program that had that substance would do to him? It wasn't making him be better. That's where I think that the situation has to be taken. I understand the rules, and you got to enforce them and try to make them all the same. But you know, I was the first time that I heard this. He received a text from his brother telling him, hey, it's not that spray that got Vijay in trouble, right? That's the first thing I said. Would that be the same case and he'll be in it for a long while now? But, you know, you have to make it, at some point some sense out of it. And I hope that now that the RNA and the PGA Tour are making some amendments on the rules side, they should do the same thing on this thing. I mean, this is a guy that is 831 in the world, okay? He was just trying to drop some pounds to be able to work on his golf swing throughout the program with his instructor at the same time that he was going to be losing weight. It wasn't like he was trying purposely to, okay, now I'm going to get some steroids and I'm going to get better. No, he even turned himself in if it was that case, which you could say, well, he did it because he knew he was going to be caught. No, he wasn't. He was going to take some time off to do all this. But when he saw that, he said, okay, let me turn myself in. And the PGA Tour swaps him with that. 3 months, slaps him with a 3-month suspension. I really am, I understand, again, like you, I understand the point of enforcing the rules, but at some point you got to say something like what happened to Scott Stallings, and now to him, hey, he's not improving. He came here to say it to you, otherwise he could have gotten shut up. What are you getting now the players to do? Well, I'll stay silent. I won't say anything. I will keep it. They treat them better because that first offense, they just don't announce it. They'll treat them, and then a second one is the one that is published. So in this case, he would have been better off just going, and if he gets caught, no one would have ever known. So, yeah, at some point, you have to put some sense, some common sense on this one.
Yeah, you know, I kind of hate to do this, but, I mean, we go back to, like, you know, DJ, who was into everything and, you know, doing everything possible that was wrong. And, you know, he takes a 6-month sabbatical, and that could have been a suspension. We don't really know. because they don't make those public. But yeah, I don't know. This just seems, what we're hearing coming out of this drug enforcement stuff on the PGA Tour just seems really stupid to me. I guess it's like they're trying to publicly say, hey, we're really doing something. Well, what they're doing is making themselves look really stupid as far as I'm concerned. So I kind of hope they get this sorted out a little bit. Somebody needs to, say, hey, let's have some common sense here, and, this really doesn't affect anything. This is your one strike, and, we'll move on from here. Don't let it happen again, kind of thing. So I don't know. When I saw it, I thought it was kind of stupid, and the more I read about it and researched it, I feel even more so. So, PGA Tour, they still got some problems with this drug. I mean, they're still eating crow over the Vijay Singh thing. They're mm-hmm. going to end up paying them out. I mean, they're going to pay a bunch of money to Vijay over that thing. He's got him dead to rights. So, they don't know what they're doing yet. They got to get this figured out.
They do. Hey, with that, we'll wrap up our practice range, where every week Fred and I pick a topic and each of us take our own shots at it. This time, I think we both agreed on the same thing. There has to be some common sense, but we do know and recognize that there's a need for the rules to be enforced. Now, let's go to our VIG, very important guest of the week. Just 30 seconds ago, we got the audio to load. Hopefully it'll play. At least it's showing there. But we're very pleased to have the president and CEO of the Western Golf Association and Evans Scholars, John Kaskowski, on the Backline Report for the second time. Western Golf Association oversees the Evans Scholars Foundation that awards full ride, 4-year college scholarships to deserving caddies. Evans Scholars currently funds 965 students in universities around the country and has the goal to reach 1,000 students under scholarship by 2020. Fred, anything you want to tell us about this interview before we play it?
No, just the fact that this is something that's very near and dear to my heart. I really think the Evans Scholar Program is one of the best programs in the nation, and I'll talk some more after we play the interview, but we cover some topics. He kind of updates us. We talked to John a couple of years ago and he came on the show, and so we just kind of updated some things, and it was great to talk to him again, Carlos.
We're here at Beachmont Country Club near Cleveland, Ohio today. We are here for the Evans Scholars Selection Committee meeting, interviewing and selecting young men and women caddies who will receive scholarships to attend college. And we're talking to John Kaskowski, who is the president and CEO of Western Golf Association and Evans Scholars. John, welcome back to the Back Nine Report.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a couple of years, but it's always a great pleasure to be here in Ohio. It's such an important part of the Evans Scholars program, and has been for a long time.
Yeah, we got to talk a couple years ago at Scioto at the selection meeting down there, and since then a few things have changed for Evans Scholars. Kind of give us an update a little bit, where you're at and where you're going.
It's pretty exciting times for us. We're actually in a growth strategy, so we're increasing the number of young men and women that we have in school. We have a goal to get to 1,000 kids in school by the year 2020. Right now we have 965 young men and women attending 20 universities around the country. Here in Ohio, we have a program at Ohio State in Miami, and really it's an exciting time. We're trying to identify more young men and women that caddy, but also qualify for the Evans Scholarship nationally.
I was talking to Amy Littlebridge a little bit earlier today, and I think she said you're actually ahead of target on reaching your 1,000.
We are. That's the thing about goals. You hope to achieve them, but once you do that, we've got to set a new goal. We're going to get to 1,000. We're confident about that. And then we'll set that next goal. Maybe it's 1,200, something like that. But it's certainly an exciting time for us as an organization, because the more people that you tell about the story of the Evans Scholars Foundation, they seem to be more engaged and they want to help.
Following along that line, I know you're always looking to grow and expand. You have a very strong presence throughout the Midwest. What are some other areas that maybe you're growing in and expanding into?
the Midwest has always been a stronghold for us. We started in Chicago, and then we branched out to Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin and Indiana. And, you know, we were kind of viewed as a Midwest organization, but we really view ourselves internally as a national organization. And we've expanded our efforts to the East Coast, mainly the let's call it the New York metropolitan area. So New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, branch, and certainly in Philadelphia. And in the last 5 to 6 years, we've added 50 kids in those areas on Evans Scholarship. So that's kind of where the fish are. On the East Coast, they have great caddy programs, great clubs that have outstanding caddy programs, and our goal is to try to tap into some of those existing programs and identify some kids that can be Evans Scholars.
You also have some schools out west that are involved in the Evans Scholars program.
We do. You know, we're fortunate. We've had chapters at the University of Colorado for a long time, since the late 60s, and we've also had a presence in the Pacific Northwest at Washington and Oregon for quite some time. Our founder, Chick Evans, actually did a barnstorming tour back in the 40s and preaching about the Evans Scholars Foundation and what caddying can mean. So it was really a Pied Piper in that sense. But we just recently opened an Evans Scholarship house at the University of Oregon, so all the kids are living together in a house that we own. And we recently purchased the house at the University of Washington. Even though we've had Evans Scholars at both of those schools for close to 40 years, we finally have a house where they're all going to live together under one roof.
And that's part of your program also. When the kids do go to school, most of your schools have their own facility, their own place that they live in, their own Evans Scholars building.
That's right. It's a pillar of the program, is that communal living, we call it. So all the scholars live together. That wasn't always the case. In the last 10 years, that was a goal that we stated, is we're going to have 100% of the kids living together under one roof. And once this Washington house opens, that will be the case. So we find that that's what makes our program different. The kids living together for 4 years, building relationships, creating these bonds that, quite frankly, last a lifetime. And hopefully they'll continue to with those relationships through their lifetime and ultimately give back to the organization that provided them the scholarships as well.
It's working. 3.3 grade average across all your scholar students, as well as 95% graduation rate.
You know, those are the stats that are amazing to me. You know, how many of your listeners had a 3.3, GPA in college, and especially at the universities where our kids are attending? These are world-class universities, and, you know, the average is 3.3 over 965 kids in school. That's amazing to me. The other stat that really resonates with people is, 95% of the kids graduate. So that means to me they're getting the opportunity to go to college, but they're taking advantage of it as well by getting good grades and graduating in 4 years. It's just really an incredible story.
This is my second selection committee, but listening to the stories of the kids, there's 20 applicants here today that are going through their oral interview. The stories of these kids, what they do, the work ethic, and their student activities, just outstanding.
It is a great event, and you wish everyone could come to a selection meeting, because when you start reading stories or hearing people talk about, they don't have a lot of confidence in today's youth. And you realize that, boy, we're in pretty good shape. The future's in pretty good shape if these 20 young men and women are indicative of what's out there in the youth in America today, because they are. Caddying creates, identifies hard workers, people that want to get ahead. And every one of these young men and women that are interviewing here today earned the right to be here. It's really kind of special to hear their stories and hear about what they want to do.
Well, it's always one of my favorite things. As I say, it's the second time I've had the opportunity to do it, and I'm going to take it every chance I get. So thank you for having me here today, and John, thanks for talking with us.
Oh, love being a part of it. Thank you.
So there you have it. That was John Kaskowski, the president and CEO of the Western Golf Association and Evans Scholars, here on the Backman Report for a second time. Fred, this reminded me of last year, the BMW Championship was played in Lake Forest, Illinois in September there at the Conway Farms Golf Club. And they raced, since 2007, BMW Championship has raised $27 million for the Evans Scholar Foundation. This past year was $2.6 million, and they are the event's sole charity. Jason Day also had a special donation on his behalf because they have what they call the hole-in-one scholarship, which is a full four-year Evans scholarship worth $100,000. And that was awarded on behalf of him because he aced the number 17 with a 7-iron from 188 yards during the second round of the BMW Championship last year. So definitely this scholarship is a life-changing opportunity for golf caddies around the U.S., Fred.
Yeah, it's really a cool thing. And as I mentioned in the piece, I had the pleasure of attending the selection committee meeting over in Cleveland last week and got to hear firsthand the interviews with these amazing kids. Remember, these are 17, 18-year-old kids that have to stand in front of 100 or so older country club types and answer questions about themselves. So the way these kids comport themselves, plus the stories of their backgrounds, are just truly amazing. One young lady graduated with a perfect 4.0. She scored 33 out of 36 on the ACT. She's going into pre-med, but her backstory is that when her parents, when she was younger and her parents were going through a nasty divorce, her father shot her mother and killed himself. She and her two brothers have grown up with their grandparents. Her brother already attends Ohio State on an Evans scholarship. She wants to attend Notre Dame. I think the Evans Scholarship Foundation, along with the Notre Dame, is going to make that happen for her. But this is just one of the many stories that come out. If you read Ohio Golf Journal, you've read a few of the stories. I publish them occasionally from month to month. And I expect to continue to post more of these extraordinary stories in the future. But I urge everyone, Carlos, all of our listeners, to log on to WGAESF.org and make a donation to this worthy foundation. You can do it for a little $25. If you want to do more, great, but you know, it's really a good deal. The Evans Scholarship Foundation is making a difference in these kids' lives and investing in the future of our country and world. So I just love talking about them. I'm going to keep on my soapbox here, and we're going to keep talking about it, Carlos, because I really think the Evans Scholarship Foundation is one of the best things going.
Yeah, and if you look, you'll find hundreds and hundreds of great feel-good stories. I mean, I remember last year, I read about Ainsley Woodward, the young Chai caddy that spent summer schlepping golf bags around the golf course trying to earn some extra money. And, you know, he was raised by a single mom after his father was murdered in Detroit. So he started working as a caddy to help his mom. And the furthest thing from his mind was college. And he had never heard of the Evans Scholarship. And he finally heard about it. He tried it, and now he's making his progress towards getting a college degree. So, you know, that's just another one of those feel-good stories that the Evans Scholarship is really making a life-changing difference. And with that, we wrap up our VIG Very Important Guest of the Week, John Kaskowski, the president and CEO of the Western Golf Association and the Evans Scholarship. Now it's time for our final putts, and as usual, I'm going to take the first two. Bama alum Justin Thomas and Georgia alum Kevin Kistner, they had a friendly wager. You know, there was this small thing in college football this past weekend. I think it was a national championship between the two old SEC rivals, right? That's something like that. Well, Thomas won, of course. The Crimson Tide's second-string quarterback came in to save the day after the Bulldogs have Bama on the ropes, almost knocked out, but they really made it up and won. So Kistner made good on the bet, and he wore a Bama jersey. Yes, that would have been humiliating for him. But Justin Thomas was so excited about the Tides winning the college football playoffs again that he called the coach, Nick Saban, to congratulate him on the historic win. And Nick even took the call. That's when you know your fame level has reached elite status, so Justin Thomas definitely is there. He has arrived. And speaking of football, the legendary QB, Brett Favre, he says that he would rather see his grandchildren play golf, not football. He told Tom Schatt of the USA Today, and I'm going to quote him, "I got three grandsons. I'm not going to encourage them to play football. I'm not going to discourage them, but I would much rather be a caddy for them in golf than watch them play football." And that's crazy. People say, I can't believe he would say that. But, you know, head injuries are going to continue. The quality of player is only going to go up. And that means concussions are not going to go down. So that's a scary issue. End of quote. Fred, that is a serious indictment on the concussions issue within the NFL. I mean, we keep hearing almost an every week basis about the concussion protocol not being followed on big-time players. I mean, Cam Newton was the latest one. Players exposing themselves with the recent now boycotting issues as well. The NFL has their hands full, and they have some really heavy ironing to do us. None of those issues are going away anytime soon, and the ratings, like we have talked so many times, are going to continue to plummet.
Yeah, I think football's got some real problems that they got to figure out. So they were the king of the hill. They still make a lot of money. A lot of people watch it. I understand that, but I see a lot more kids playing lacrosse and soccer and other sports rather than football. Carlos, before I get into final putts, I want to mention that the January issue of Ohio Golf Journal was published last week. Features include the Boyne Resort is a triple threat, Matt Janella's spiritual journey to abandoned dunes, Evan Scholars continue to fund college scholarships for caddies, plus more Ohio golf news, equipment reviews, and golf travel to Pawleys Island, Founders Club, and True Blue. You can find all of the episodes at OhioGolfJournal.com. Just click on the link to receive it in your mail, in your email, every month. Also, Back Nine Report TV, current show features an interview with Toledo Blade sports writer Kyle Rowland. He and I discuss the hottest topics in golf right now, plus we list our favorite golf courses. And also, Carlos, to talk about more stories for Evan Scholars, one of the episodes on Back Nine Report TV, there's two videos. I talk about it, and there's two videos about Lauren Farhat, who, when she was born, had a disfigured leg, and the leg actually had to be amputated when she was just a very young child. And so she had to grow up with a prosthetic leg. But she became a caddy and went through, earned an Evans Scholarship, went to Michigan State, got her degree, and now she works for Evans Scholars in Chicago. So that's, I mean, we can go on with all these stories. But you can find it at Back Nine Report TV on Roku. Just go on there, find it, download it if you have Roku, if you have access to it. We got some great stuff coming up for that, coming down the road. Did some planning today, talking to some people. We're going to get some more videos on there and talk to some interesting guests. Should be good. For my final putts, I'm going to talk a little bit about legendary hustler Leon Crump. He died at the age of 82 in North Carolina. Crump played golf to gamble. He traveled with legendary Titanic Thompson and Amarillo Slim. He wasn't a professional golfer, but a golfer who played to gamble. He wrote a book about his lifetime of gambling on a golf course, drive for show, putt for dough. He came close to making on the PGA Tour back in the day, but ultimately found his calling in playing for odds and big bucks against others who would mistakenly think they could beat him. Ian Poulter, it seems that when Ian won the 2012 WGC HSV Champions in Shanghai, officials failed to send him the fancy Wedgwood trophy. 5 years later, it turns out that it was sent erroneously to Martin Keimer. I'll bet Martin has had a pretty good laugh over that one. Well, Ian finally got his trophy back, but it only took 5 years. I want to give a little shout-out to a friend of ours, John Powers, who was named the new men's golf coach at Bowling Green State University. We have had his sister, Caroline Powers, a former Symmetra Tour player and who is now assistant women's golf coach at Michigan State, on the show before. Plus, his cousin, Emily Bostel, is the head women's golf coach at the University of Florida. So a lot of great coaches there in the Powers and Bostel family, so we want to wish them all well. And, Carlos, you know that we could not make it through the show without a mention of Tiger Woods. It seems that Tiger's ex, Lindsey Vonn, who qualified for the 2018 Olympic team, once again was asked about her former flame. In a tell-all piece for Sports Illustrated, Vonn said, "I loved him, and we're still friends. Sometimes I wish he would have listened to me a little more, but he's very stubborn, and he likes to go his own way. I hope this latest comeback sticks. I hope he goes back to winning tournaments." Carlos, that wraps it up for January 16th, 2018.
Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, the president and CEO of the Western Golf Association and Evans Scholars, John Kaskowski. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also, Roku TV, you can see it there. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.